Morning.
It's good to be back. I guess it was a little over a year ago, or several months over a year ago, that I stood here and received a blessing from you all before I left for a year to go with MCC to Egypt. Thank you very much for your prayers. Thank you to Diane for your letters. Okay. And I really appreciate the connection that I have with this congregation, and it's good to be back. Let me give you just a little picture of the things that I did before I start getting into this scripture. I think the scripture is so rich that I barely have anything left to say, but I'll try. At first, when I went to Egypt, I was living and working in Cairo in an orphanage with about 75 women or 75 girls who came from families not necessarily without parents, but families that were broken or they were placed in danger in some way. This was a place where they could come and get an education and receive the things that they needed to have a stable life and different church emphasis and different, what's the word I'm looking for? Foundations in the life that they needed to live. My role in the house involved brushing hair, braiding hair. They were really excited that I knew how to French braid. I didn't actually know very well at first, but after about five, you get a little better. And then I would help with cooking or with cleaning and teaching English. It was often a struggle because I was one of the only, or the only, English tutor for the house of 75 girls, and most of them needed some help every day. There was a lot more need than there could be given from me, which was very difficult. After about 6 months of working there, another woman who was working in another city named Beni Suef, which was a little bit south of Cairo, left her position with MCC. It wasn't working very well for her. And after talking with my country reps, with my bosses, they said, it's a really hard job at this house where you're working, at this orphanage. We're not going to put someone there next year because it's changed so much it doesn't really fit what MCC is trying to do anymore. Now we have this other place that just got open, and they really want someone to go there. Do you want to move? And it was difficult. I thought about it, and I decided to move. So the second half, I was working as an English teacher in a school, basically with middle school students, and also teaching adult classes in the evening in Beni Suef. So that's the rough geography, the rough timeline of what I did this last year. It turned out to be a very difficult year for me. I know that I felt a call to go, and I was... I had a great second semester my sophomore year and was saying, all right, God, life is awesome. Where's the next challenge? What can I sink my teeth into? I'm looking forward to something that'll stretch me and, you know, help me grow. And here came this job opportunity to work in Egypt to learn Arabic, which was the language I really was interested in studying, to connect with a part of the world that a lot of people shy away from or seems kind of dicey, difficult to deal with. I said, this sounds great. I went, and it was all of those things. It was challenging, it was difficult, to connect with. The culture was very different. I was stretched. I hope I grew. But a lot of the year, I felt like there were moments of grace in each day, and that the call that I felt was real, but it was not strong enough. There was more need than I had any hope to give to. This house, 5 years ago in the orphanage, there were 35 girls, and this year there are 75. And the space and the administration and the resources are basically the same, which is part of why MCC wasn't really sure if it was really helpful anymore for there to be a person there, because I no longer had time to work with the girls or to sit around and hang out and get to know their stories, sort of share who we are, why I'm there. I taught English from 10 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. And it was difficult. One of the first weeks I was there, a little girl, probably age 4, her name was Shine Matt, she came up to me and she was asking me to do something. It was bedtime, so I couldn't understand what she was saying. She took my hand, she led me to her bed, she was like, okay, we'll pray together. I said, is it okay if I pray in English? And she's like, yes. So I prayed in English and she prayed in Arabic, and then she had another request. She was asking me something and I could tell it was a question. I had no idea what it was. She was like, you go first. So she sits there and she's like, da 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 da. I could tell it was a story just from the way she was speaking. So I said, all right, that's cool. I can tell a story too. Can I tell it in English? Yeah, sure, that's fine. So I told Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I think it came to mind first because we always put the third name to bed we go. I told it, and then she said, can you tell it in Arabic? He said, no, I'm sorry. So she told me another story. Just told me another story in Arabic. I have no idea what she said, but it was really cool. It was a real way to connect. And I felt like that was a real moment of grace, that here I'm sitting on the bed of a 4-year-old Egyptian girl sharing bedtime stories that we don't understand, but she's so happy for the connection, and after a long day, I was really happy for that connection too. And moments of grace like that were in each day. But I was also living in the same place I was working. And some weeks I wouldn't leave from Saturday afternoon, when my work week started, to Thursday evening, when it ended. And the demand, the need, the way that I could connect with these girls and then see how much was lacking from their lives was so strong, it was overwhelming. The moments of grace were there, but I finished each day, and I would sit down and I'd say, yes, God was there, yes, God was there. It wasn't strong enough to help me look forward to the next day. A lot of the time, I felt like sitting down in my room at 8 o'clock, saying, no more people, I'm going to be an introvert for a while. And I'll pray, oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down, so that the mountains would quake at your presence. This divine massiveness that will come down and shake the foundations of a place that is searching as hard as it can to take care of 75 girls who have families that can't take care of them. Maybe their younger brother is still at home because they have enough resources for him, but not for her. She goes to another place because the family says maybe the father lost a job or got injured or something else happened and there's not enough. There's just not enough. So what do? You send the girl away. This girl ends up, 5-year-old girl, with one nun who's in charge, 75 sisters. There's not enough to go around. And I stand here going, I can see that you need more. You need more love. You are so happy to connect, or you are so inside your own pain. I need something more to break through that. But here, I'm standing here. I'm tired. I don't speak the language. I don't know what's going on. The food is not agreeing with my system. And I don't have anything left to give. So I turn around and I say, God, oh, that you would come down, that you would tear open the heavens and come down so that the mountains would quake at your presence. Or as when fire kindles brushwood and the fire causes water to boil. If it's not going to be massive and mountain shaking and total restoration, at least can't you come and give a little light? And a lot of the year I felt like it was missing. It was really hard because I felt like I was in the right place. I was where God wanted me to be, and I couldn't do anything. There was more need than I had the resources to fill, than I was being given the resources to fill. When you did awesome deeds that we did not expect, you came down, the mountains quaked at your presence. I know that it's possible. I know that the mercy of God is big enough to come and transform a situation, to make us all step outside of the things that are limiting us. But you were angry, and we sinned. You have hidden your face from us. Now consider, we are all your people. But verse 10 really hits home with me. It says, we are all your people, but your holy cities have become a wilderness. Jerusalem, a desolation. Our holy and beautiful house where our ancestors praised you has been burned by fire, and all our pleasant places have become ruined. After all this, will you restrain yourself, O Lord? Will you keep silent and punish us so severely? I was standing in this place where I felt like I was needed and wanted and had nothing left to give. It was really hard. And I don't have the sort of platitudes that say, you know, it was difficult and I grew and, you know, it was a worthwhile experience and I'm glad I went. I could say those things. They don't really come from the heart. What comes from my heart is I went and it was hard and it was a challenge and God was present, but I couldn't tell. I couldn't see it. I included the Matthew passage because these girls were so hungry for connection. They were just waiting for someone to pay attention. And I love it that Jesus cares about them and brings them in. And the moments when that happened were wonderful. At the very end of my time in Egypt, I moved to Beni Suef. I was teaching a class for kids in the church, in the Orthodox Church. It was an English class, and I was the only teacher, and it was my curriculum, and so we just played games the whole time. There were no tests. And the last day, we had a field trip. We went to this retreat center that was right beside the Nile River. So there were these nice buildings with plenty of space for courtyards and a snack shop and a boat, and we went out on this boat on the water, and we're just playing around, singing songs. You know, I made a video for my parents. They're all saying hi in English. That's about the only English they spoke that day, but oh well, it was a party, not a class. It was beautiful countryside, and these kids were really having fun, and I felt a real connection. It was wonderful to see the space that was made on the grounds of a church that could include the children, the children are so beloved in the Egyptian Orthodox Church, in the Coptic Orthodox Church, that, you know, there were people there in the field across the way who had horses to ride or donkeys. The horses and donkeys weren't really into it, but the kids were. And that was a wonderful connection. And the house that I was in for the first half, the orphanage, it was safe, which is really important. Because as a female, you need someone to take care of you or to make sure that your reputation and your status, your place is intact in what I saw of the Egyptian culture. It was safe, it was fair, there were standards and ways that the girls were held accountable, it was caring, but there were too many. It was a strain on the system. The Christmas dinner that we had for the house, various members of these girls' extended families came to eat with them. So there were 200 people there. The problem was that family members would bring a friend or another friend because it's a free meal. And all of a sudden there wasn't enough. And the turkey wasn't cooked long enough. And so we're standing there trying to serve people and there's not enough to go around. What do you do? What do you do when the need is so great? We're here, we have a church, we all have places to live, places to sleep. There are people in Texas right now who don't, whose church is not there, whose house is not there. I probably won't see any effect of it except for higher prices at the gas tank. What do I do? How do I share with people who don't have enough? We live in a world that is full of need. I spent this last year grateful for prayers and aware that I was being taken care of and that there was a purpose or the presence of God in what I was doing, even though I couldn't see it and I didn't feel it and I didn't want to. And about 2 weeks, no, a little less than 2 weeks before I was scheduled to come home, I got a call from my dad, who said that my good friend, Matt Garber, had died, had drowned. And as you know, if you were... And I say blessed to be here while he was here. He was a very special person. I admired his faith. He was really important in my faith journey. He was a good friend. He loved connecting with this congregation. He loved sharing what he had here. And I'm left with the feeling of there not being enough. I'm his age. He's my age. There's still enough. What do you do? I don't have an answer, and it's been a pretty difficult last couple of months. I came home a week early. My teaching was done. I had to move out anyway. It worked out very well for me to come to Matt's service. And I was struck with the number of people there. There were 1,000 people who came to his high school auditorium. It was the first time I was seeing many of my closest friends in the face of a huge hole. During this last year, when I was, I was struggling the whole time, but at one of the moments, my friend sent me a letter, my good friend Erin, and she especially highlighted the passage in 2 Corinthians that I had read today. I'll just read it again because it's so beautiful. So we do not lose heart. Even though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all measure. Because we look not at what can be seen, but at what cannot be seen. For what can be seen is temporary, but what cannot be seen is eternal. I like it, but it gets me every time, because it blatantly says, we look at what cannot be seen. This does not add up. I'm looking, and I'm not seeing anything. So we know the answer. What's this unseen thing we're looking for? Well, it's the kingdom of God, which is awesome. But I still feel like I'm looking just at a hole sometimes, just at something that's not there. I can't see it. Maybe I'm looking the wrong way. I know something is messed up in this equation. The world is not perfect, and that's for sure. What can I do with this hole, with this need that is there that is not filled? Well, one of the things that crossed my mind soon after Matt died, soon after I heard the news, was, oh no, he's not praying for me anymore. Something bad is going to happen. Then I realized that my theology probably needed a little bit of reworking on that one. But thinking back about my relationship with him, noticing the hole and noticing the lack that is here now becomes a way of remembering what the real essence is, what the real meaning is. It makes everything that I saw in him more precious. And it makes all the people who are here and who are around me that much closer. When you're confronted with a hole or with a wall, you have to stop. You have to look at what's going around. And I know Matt as one who lived in the light of the eternal and who had his eyes fixed on what cannot be seen, the eternal weight of glory beyond all measure. So, it's pretty difficult for me to speak about this last year because I don't have the sort of things that people expect to hear from a returning, you know, missionary or, well, helper, worker. And I personally don't see why anybody would ever leave the Shenandoah Valley. Not to dissuade you from going to Mongolia, but I'm enjoying being back, and I'm enjoying the space that being in a community that knows me, that I can speak freely to, that space that gives me time to say, okay, this was really hard. What do I do with that? One of the hymns that I remember learning from Matt, and I think it was here, though it's been a long time, so if you don't remember, that's totally fine, is in Sing the Journey, number 23. And I'd really like to sing that one as a closing hymn. My piano skills are not comparable to Matt's, but I'll give it a try if you're willing to sing with me. Before we sing it, I just want to highlight some of the words, because it's easy when you're struggling with notes to forget what you're saying. I think the beauty of this hymn are the words. Especially verse 2 slowly turning, ever turning from our ego-centered gaze, from our self-enclosing circle, from our narrow, petty ways. Slowly turning, ever turning toward the foreigner as friend, toward the city without ghetto, toward the greatness without end. Slowly turning, ever turning from our fear of death and loss, from our terror of the darkness, from our scorning of the cross. Slowly turning, ever turning toward the true and faithful one, toward the light of daybreak dawning, toward the phoenix risen sun. It doesn't get much better than that. You'll sing it. I'll play